The Guardian.
Welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, the pod that almost never was. Today, of course, we'll talk about VAR at Wembley as Tottenham score 8, but only score 6. Hopefully one of Ellis or Philippe watch the Swansea-Sheffield Wednesday game. We'll preview tonight's Arsenal-Manchester City game that will be called off after we finish recording, and we'll look ahead to another weekend of football, and we may just mention the fact that Barry and I, accompanied by Jonathan Wilson and Barney Ronay, spent 17 hours by land, ferry and Vauxhall Astor Estate to get back for today's show. Philippe Auclair, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Max. Really pleased to see you.
There's a lot of pressure on you to deliver the football, I would say, on today's pod.
Well, I was coming back from Manchester, and I can tell you that was a bit of an ordeal too.
Oh, you have an epic journey as well. You didn't feel the need to create your own hashtag and attempt to go viral and fail miserably on your journey.
You went viral, though, didn't you? After a fashion?
Between ourselves,
okay.
I believe we did. Ellis James.
I found it totally exhilarating following the Football Weekly Get Them Home hashtag.
You were.
I loved every second of it.
You were set up to be the contingency host for when we all died.
I was, yeah. I was imagining being a host to a podcast that had no guests. It was just going to be me sort of holding court about football.
Now,
very Swansea orientated.
On part of the journey, Ellis, we discovered that you will only do this pod if Barry's here.
Yes, that is true, yeah.
You make no bones about that. You
know? I make no bones about it. Actually, this is the dream team. I like Philippe and Barry. They're the ones I really want on the pod.
Okay.
McInnes, I cannot stand.
Barry.
Good morning.
It's really nice to see you.
Yes. How have you been?
Oh, I've been really good. When I say it's nice to see you, I drove the whole way from Holyhead to London. That wasn't the entire plan, but I was going to do the first bit and Barney was going to do the second bit because I had to do breakfast on TalkSport this morning with Darren Campbell.
You've already
literally you had to literally do breakfast on
yeah, just croissants and tea with Darren. No, I was booked in to host the breakfast show on the radio this morning, but I sent the Danny Kelly klaxon up at 9:30 when we got in the Astra. But I drove the whole way, and when I looked in the mirror to see if there was a lorry about to pile into us on the black ice, all I saw was Barry's face. Had 6 hours of Barry just there, either like this, staring at me, or face down, asleep.
What I'm very intrigued by is mentality.
Okay.
Because we all know that Max has this today is a new day approach to everything, the sunny side up. How, Barry, I'm intrigued as to how stoic you were.
I was.
Yeah.
Well, we were rating each other. We had a sort of in-running league table of usefulness going. As you know, so there was producer Jonathan, Wilson, Ronnie, Max and I. So I immediately shot to the top of the league table in Dublin by not getting in the 4-man taxi to the airport, but getting the bus because there was no room in the taxi. I took one for the team. Oh. Then we,
to be fair, we think that's just because Barry wanted another cigarette.
Yeah.
Now, so he claims to be selfish. But we do have, I believe, the four of us recorded the discussion of points. Here's a clip from the road trip.
What is the time, anybody?
12 minutes to 1.
Oh, yes, it says it on the sat-nav. It's 12 minutes to 1 in the morning. I'm here. Barney is here.
So say hello.
Hi, I'm also doing stuff, yeah. like adjusting the radio and doing things with the sat-nav.
Okay, so I've driven, which is what I'd say claim an act of selflessness. Barry is sitting in the middle at the back and claims that he is the superior member of the team for this service. Is that correct, Barry?
That is correct, because I'm the only one who's doing something that's utterly selfless. Everyone else is doing things that have ultimately selfish motivations. You're driving to get yourself home. Barney is sitting in the front pretending to be in charge of morale and keeping you focused. Wilson has declared himself in charge of morale because he's brought nothing else to the party at all.
Barry, I think it's like
Mesut Ozil, I'm just the game I'm playing is too subtle for your brain to understand.
Producer, not Professor Jonathan, I promoted him academically this trip. I brought wine gums, which has got him potentially from flirting with relegation to certainly the Champions League places of contributions to the journey. Wilson is currently in the West Brom. He's the sort of Alan Pardew of the trip.
No idea.
How long has he been without a win?
Wilson's been a long time without a win. He's actually below.
Wilson has contributed so little that a person who works for a car hire company is above him in the ladder of achievement on this terrible, terrible day.
Thanks.
You sound about as chipper as I imagine the Arsenal team did after they got stuffed in the final on Sunday.
There was a moment at 1:55 when Jonathan just said, do cats even have foreskins? That was when I realised it had all gone. That was it. The moment Barney broke was when the Nottingham Forest fan collared us again. Have we mentioned him yet?
No, or? There was a drunk Nottingham Forest fan on the ferry we got from Dublin to Holyhead, and he recognised Max. And he was quite nice for a while until he reached a level of drunkenness where he thought Max and him were busy mates,
yeah,
and was basically just following Max around the ferry, being not obnoxious, but just annoying.
Did he bring up their double European Cup wins in 1979 and 1980?
There is a clip, I believe. We I don't think there's a clip of him. There is a moment where we were all quite upbeat, and then it was so windy, we were just bobbing up and down outside Holyhead, and we couldn't get to shore for an hour and a half. This is where Barney became one of those news report people when they just say, they're not telling us anything. Anyway, I believe this is around the moment where we're just bobbing up and down outside of Holyhead.
Gary, your thoughts?
I am loving this. There's a drunk Nottingham Forest fan who won't leave Max Rushton alone. He and Max have become friends on this voyage.
I just pretended to go to the toilet. Didn't need to go.
Yeah. The rest of us have just moved about 20 yards down the, I don't know, gangway to get away from this pain in the arse. Who are we talking to here, by the way?
Well, this is the pod. So
oh, okay. Safe. Sorry, right.
He's more of a TalkSport fan.
Good Lord Almighty, this is... it's been a long, long day. And we're so close to sovereign soil and yet so far away. But and our journey is only beginning.
Jonathan, how are you feeling?
Weary. I've got great admiration for the two drivers. I think it's a sacrifice that I couldn't make right now. But mainly, it's so much better than it was 5 minutes ago when I was next to a drunk Nottingham Forest fan. Finding this seat has actually, I've perked up significantly. Apparently, on his 12th birthday, his mum gave him a Manchester United birthday cake and he was on the front page of Shropshire Star. He told me while standing too close and breathing beerily in my face and spitting occasionally.
You know that advert for the Navy when they say life without limits? No. The limit is you're on a fucking boat. You can't get off.
The positive is he has stopped singing This Loving Feeling. Which was a particular low point.
He tried to get a sing-song going and failed, but continued singing, which I think is a measure of his iron self-belief and his total drunkenness.
We'll update you as and when we get on land and we take, well, if the Vauxhall Astra's there waiting for us.
Oh, it won't be.
Oh, God.
Just one other thing.
Yeah.
When we got off, as footboat passengers, we were taken off the ferry on a bus. And then there was a drunk Irishman.
Barry Glendenning.
No, it wasn't me. Who, producer Jonathan, had spotted shoplifting cheap aftershave from the shop in on the ferry. He sat beside me on the bus. And then he started singing. It was just...
this dystopian nightmare.
It sounds absolutely brilliant, and I wish I'd been there.
I mean, once we got beyond the horror of what was happening, I look back on that now and see it as character building and a fun experience, but I never want to do it again or anything like it. And I have to fly to Australia next week.
We were doing a live show, the four people that you heard there, and I think it went well. I mean, it seems so long ago now, I can't really remember. Right, should we talk about football? Yeah. Philippe.
I'll just step out.
And Ellis.
Why are you talking? Why are you turning to me?
How much sleep have you had out of interest?
5 hours.
5 hours. What about you, Barry?
3.
I read an article in The Guardian a few months ago. If you want to Google it, it was what those late nights might be costing you. And it was terrifying. It's completely changed my behaviour. So enjoy diabetes, Barry.
I think that ship sailed.
Well, at least one ship sailed. Did it dock? And was there a drunk Forest fan on it?
That was a moment potentially not for broadcast where Jonathan Wilson just tweeted, docking in Holyhead. We had to explain to him the other meaning of docking.
Oh, one of my personal high points.
Tottenham 6, Rochdale 1, Philippe. Uh-huh. VAR chaos. Even before the game started, the lines were painted blue so they could be seen more clearly in the snow. Mm-hmm. And then they tested VAR, which didn't work with blue lines. So that had to be repainted white.
Why no orange ball?
It's a very good point.
I think it's probably because this particular competition has got a sponsored ball and perhaps had not thought about such an extraordinary event as snow in February. So I would imagine that's the reason.
I'm very nostalgic about the orange ball, but it's completely died a death in the British game.
I have a gag here for the purists.
Oh, yeah, good.
Go on.
Did they field really big strikers? Because if it's blue lines, you need a massive attack.
Yes. Whoa. Yes, mate.
I think Ellis is just saying that's good because he really likes you.
No, he gets it.
No, I get it.
I get it too.
Barry likes music. Pretty cool.
Jonathan Wilson doesn't.
No, that's true.
I thought you should actually probably have a blast of Roy Orbison singing I Drove All Night to start the show.
That's a very good idea. We'll
great
that,
song too.
Put that in post.
So anyway, talk us through this latest VAR chaos.
Well, there's nothing much to be talked through apart from the fact that, again, the problem was not so much the decisions as to the indecision, rather, of the people using it and the extraordinary amount of time that was wasted on marginal decisions. And then basically it's not ready. I think that we can now take the point of view that despite the efforts of people in high spheres of power, namely at FIFA, the system is a complete joke at the moment. I mean, the way it is used is a complete joke, and that was terrible, really. I mean, the amount of time wasted. It was not the decisions, I don't think, when you see the images again.
Yeah. It's that thing both about clear stand. And obvious, isn't it? I mean, Llorente's tug is a sort of a foul, not really. The run-up from the Son is strange because the rule is, or the law is, that you can stutter during a run-up.
You're allowed to faint, but he completely stops.
He completely stops, yeah.
Which I think is unsporting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do we need to go back and make John Aldridge retake all those penalties?
He did that in 88, didn't he?
Mm.
When Besant saved it, but it wasn't a complete stop. Whereas Son completely stops, I think.
I think at some point yesterday, in a moment of reverie, I had this idea for a feature. It would be a good newspaper feature or whatever, so I mean, you know, patenting it here, but to go back and do great football moments that, you know, sliding doors, moments, you know.
So 66 World Cup final,
stuff like
obviously.
That. But
goal line technology, someone's already probably done that with the goal line technology.
Yes, kept the boffins in there for about 50 years, actually.
I only heard this on the wires, but what I find interesting about the VAR thing now is how many football journalists who were firmly in favour of it. And football journalists who get entrenched in opinions, it's normally hard to get them to change their minds about anything. And I'm as bad as anyone, but a lot of them are changing their minds and have totally changed their minds. You're one of them.
I'm one of them, yes, absolutely.
But isn't it... It's one of those things where it was brought in largely because of pressure put on referees by the media.
And it increases the pressure on referees. That's the terrible thing. We had a perfect example of it yesterday, as we had in previous examples this season, where the referee could have taken the decision without consulting with the video referee. It might not have been the right decision, but I don't think there would have been too much controversy because there were really minute, well, okay, difference of opinion, who cares? Whereas now, the guys are absolutely terrified to get anything wrong because, unfortunately, the people who are the most vocal for VAR, perhaps, and are saying how bad it is or how good it is, are also the people who would be the hardest on referees, whatever they did. So it's a no-win situation. And it's a different situation because of the pressure on referees in football is totally unlike the pressure on umpires in cricket or even referees in rugby, completely unlike it. So since they're going to be moving targets anyway, perhaps it's better to let them carry on and do some mistakes and just forgive them and carry on. And use VAR for obvious things and perhaps for retrospective action, like, you know, violent conduct and things like that. That's fine. Yeah. Goal line technology, we all agreed. But this was a bit of a shambles,
It added 8 minutes to the first half.
8 minutes, yeah, absolutely.
And also the fans in the ground weren't told what was going on. So it was shambolic.
I even heard on the radio this morning, Danny Rose being interviewed on TalkSport, and he just happened to mention that it's just a small thing, but how cold it was, and to stand around in that cold was just really, really unpleasant. You know,
well, the second half was ridiculous. I've not seen football played in conditions like that for a very long time
Since the famous Chelsea game.
Yes.
With the orange ball this time, Jen.
I'm very easily influenced, and I agree with Barney Ronay. This may be because I spent the last 17 hours sitting next to him. But his view on VAR is, what it means is you don't talk about anything apart from VAR. So you don't talk about Llorente getting a hat-trick, which is really important for him and his season. We don't talk about Rochdale equalising and hitting the post and how
the first half.
That's a slightly pernicious influence in the way that football is discussed anyway. If you watch Match of the Day, it's just refereeing decisions. Yep. They never, ever discuss the ebb and flow of the match that they've just watched. It is always picking over decisions.
It's also becoming now a topic which is used in football governance and by football, different football governing bodies to have a pop at each other. Like, for example, UEFA has said very clearly, Čeferin, the new chairman, when newish chairman, has said, we're not going to use VAR in Champions League next season. And basically said, it's up to FIFA and the World Cup to sort it out first, which is, you know, quite cheeky. Whereas FIFA is going for immediate inclusion. So you're starting, and it's because there is a tug of war between the Confederation and FIFA as well. So we're all talking, as I said, we're talking about the wrong things all the time. It was supposed to make our lives easier, to take pressure off referees, to bring some fairness in some situations where clearly it had been unfair in the past. And it's the exact opposite which is happening. It's bloody chaos.
But the rules of the game have become more important than the actual game. And the thing is, at the World Cup,
I think we are going to a stage where football is basically to consist of controversies about refereeing decision and transfer market rumours.
Yeah, we're there already, I think. But at the World Cup, there will be referees using VAR for the very first time. Yep. That will ruin the
competition. Oh no, it's going to be an absolute disaster, isn't it?
You know, a lot of the referees there will have never, ever had any practice with it.
Hey, Swansea beat Sheffield Wednesday 2-0, reached the quarterfinals for the first time since 1964. Ellis, the first time you will see Swansea City in the FA Cup quarterfinal. Even though I've seen Cambridge in it twice.
We got to the semi-final that year in 64, got to semi-final twice, 26 and 64. The programme from the 1964 semi-final at Villa Park against Preston, I have framed in my house. Oh. I am a big fan of the FA Cup. I feel like lots of people born before 1990, probably, I'm very fond of the competition, and I really hope we take it seriously. Some of you might know, if you listen to this pod, that I have access to Danny Gabaldon. And
At all times.
Okay. Pretty much at all times.
You're in a WhatsApp group with Danny Gabaldon and Ian Roberts.
Yes. And he told me that all Premier League players want to play Premier League teams in the FA Cup. They don't want to be drawn against teams from the lower divisions, which surprised me, actually, because I assumed that the ego of a Premier League footballer, if you were drawn against someone from League Two, you'd assume that you were good enough to play them. But they don't like the fact that it's an unknown quantity. The pitch might not be up to much. So we've got Spurs in the quarterfinal. He's played weakened teams, Carlos, up to this point in the competition. But I really hope we go for it now, because I think it's a great competition. We are 90 minutes from Wembley. It would be superb if we beat
Tottenham. I'll make you an offer, and I guess you might know what it is. FA Cup win and relegation.
Oh, I would take the FA Cup win and relegation. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm out of step with certainly our younger fans, but I just think when we won the Capital One Cup 2013, that was one of the best days of my life. Why would I not want to repeat that?
I think any Wigan fan,
yeah,
if you ask them now, would you have taken FA Cup and relegation, knowing what you know now, they'd have all, absolutely.
Even the players would.
But I think a lot of younger fans, and I may be being unfair on younger fans, but I think a lot of younger fans think that you get relegated, it's like you disappear off the edge of the world, never to be seen again. It's just relegation.
Yes.
It's not the end of the world.
Into a really fun and exciting competitive league. And, there are big clubs in that division, and there's good away trips to be had from the supporters' perspective. Obviously, you could drop like a stone, but if not, the fact is, you know, you're not being wound up by the High Court. I was reading about Doncaster Rovers 97-98.
Oh, that thread. Yeah. That thread on Twitter, which almost worth reading out, the whole thing was amazing, wasn't it?
I know the guy who wrote that, actually. He's a big Wales fan. There's a lot of Wales away trips. But
what is this?
Donny Rovers in 97-98 went 34 games without a win, and they had four managers, and it's the worst season in their history, and it's just calamity after calamity. And then you look at what happened to them, or what happened to Aldershot or Newport County or the Swans in the mid-80s. We wound up Christmas 85. Being relegated to the Championship is not a huge disaster.
It was in reaction to Arsenal fans complaining about turning up in the Carabao Cup final.
Winning the FA Cup, I would remember that for the rest of my life. And obviously now that I've talked about it on this podcast, we're going to get stuffed by Tottenham. But we are at home, and that's the important thing, according to Danny Gabdon, which I just found extraordinary that you'd prefer to play Spurs than Rochdale. But that is how Premier League players think about it.
At the quarterfinal draw, Swansea Spurs, then Manchester United, Brighton, Leicester City, Chelsea, and Wigan Southampton. So, yeah, I mean, it's the same, isn't it, with Swansea? You hope that Leicester City now put a full strength side out against
Chelsea.
They will. You think?
I know.
Are you? Claude's told you.
He hasn't told me, but they're going to go for it.
Okay.
Do you have? It'd be crazy not to go. And to be honest, I have them as one of my favourite for the competition.
Do you have a? Are you in a WhatsApp group with Claude Puel?
No, I'm not sure that Claude knows what WhatsApp is actually.
Okay. Is he more an iMessage guy?
I don't get the feeling that he's very much a man of a smartphone kind of guy.
He's got a Nokia 8210. He plays Snake when he's not managing.
I'm probably completely wrong, number, but I'm not in a WhatsApp group with him.
Oh, get involved. He's great value. I absolutely adore them.
Do you want me to create a WhatsApp group with me, you, and Danny Gabidon right now?
Well, I don't. Not if it's going to mean he pays less attention to Ellis. Oh.
Yes, that would be.
I don't want to turn his head.
And one thing is sure, and I've got a few Leicester fans among my friends, including a very close friend. And they all say, you know, we have to go for it full tilt because they're the club. I think they played four finals, four FA Cup finals, never won one. It would be absolutely enormous for the club and for the fans to do that. So I think that's very much the terraces are going to make their voice heard. There's no reason why they shouldn't go full tilt for it.
Ellis, I think the reason we value the FA Cup, people of our generation, is because of the European ban when we were young.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, there was less football on telly, et cetera, because the FA, no clubs were in the European Cup or anything like that.
Well, the first FA Cup final I remember is 88. So at the time, it would have been the big match on ITV on a Sunday with Elton Wellesby, and then the FA Cup final. And I would watch the entire build-up and lap it up. And it still means a lot to me as a competition. I just think it's a... Like Newport County, they made 900 grand from their cup run, and it's going to buy them new training facilities, and their fans got a day out at Wembley, and they took 8,500 supporters there. I felt very sorry for the Rochdale fans who couldn't make it down because of the weather.
Yeah, that is a shame.
Which leads us to...
If they'd had a bit of gumption about, they'd have made it, Max. We showed what could be done.
Because Rochdale, as a club, they went about 40 years without promotion or relegation or a significant cup run. So it would have meant an awful lot to some of their fans. And unfortunately, you know, some of them wouldn't have been able to make it.
Which leads us nicely to the fact that there are not going to be no replays in the quarterfinals in the future.
They are. And we'll do that in part two.
It's 8:30. We spent an hour and a half waiting to board to get ashore. Here is the Europe Car desk. Barney Roney alongside me. How are you feeling?
I'm incredibly tense, incredibly tense.
Has Europe Car woman waited with the Vauxhall Astra? We just don't know yet. There is a Europe Car woman. This is amazing. Hi.
Have you been waiting for us for the last hour and a half?
Yes.
Please.
Oh, thank you so much. Do you have a Vauxhall Astra estate?
Yes.
What's your name?
Jessica.
Jessica, you are the greatest human of all time. Thank
you're the
you.
Kindest person
thank
we've
you.
Seen all day.
Oh, this is great news. We have a car.
That was a really wonderful moment. And Barney and I got out about 20 minutes early because we said we'd join the we'd get in the you know the busy queue, and Barry and the two Jonathans sort of rolled their eyes, thinking it would be another hour before we eventually got on land. And that was the only time I got slightly angry, when we had the car and you weren't there. So it's okay now. The only time you got angry is when you found out producer Jonathan had a massive bag between his legs, and we had an estate, really. That didn't help you in the back. We just had more room in the boot to put bags.
Correct, yes. I wouldn't say I was angry. I don't think it was deliberate. But his bag, which should have been in the boot, was taking up over a third of the available legroom that was needed by three grown men.
When men are pushed to their limits, you really see the true character of someone. And Barry's snapping point is bag-related. Who'd have thought it?
Breaking news, a woman has just given birth on the A66 outside Darlington. So perhaps our epic journey isn't so epic after all, Barry. Many congratulations to her. The winter break, Philippe.
Oui.
Talks there could be a two-week break in early February from 2020. I mean, could do it in late February. I would discuss maybe early March might be a good time to do it. Fifth round of the FA Cup would take place in midweek. There'll be no replays. Do we think this is a good idea?
The break is certainly a good idea. The way in which it's going is a bit concerning. And the one thing that immediately made my ears prick up is the fact that the cup would be moved to weekdays, because I've seen the impact of this on the French Cup, which has gone down. The French Cup used to be a really, really big thing. I'm not saying that because this is the only trophy my club has ever won, which is Le Havre. We won it in 1959. But since it's become the sort of poor relation in terms of the trophies on offer, even some people thinking it is beneath the League Cup, the Coupe de la Ligue, which is really saying something. And one major factor in that decline has been the fact that the games are not played during the weekend. It has an impact on attendances, without a doubt. Makes it much more of a problem for people travelling supporters, which is even more important in England than it is in France. The idea that the replays are being cancelled as well, that will have consequences on the finance for smaller clubs who might actually be looking forward to a replay. But I suppose there's, you know, what do you do? I mean,
something's got to give, hasn't it?
Yeah, something's got to give. And the League Cup, extraordinarily enough, are still, they want these, you know, two-legged ties in the semi-finals, which I find a little bit strange. Yes, there's one competition too many. I mean, that's what I've always thought in this country, which is the League Cup. Oops.
You could split the revenues across all of the clubs, which would go some way to help the smaller clubs. Yeah, you'd
pull all of it, not just individual games.
Yes,
NFL sort of thing where you have the pool of resources that distribute it to evenly.
Because this cup competition to Rochdale, I mean, it's a shame that there was only 25,000 at Wembley yesterday for Rochdale, but for Newport County, it will secure their finances for the next 3 years. So it's a real shame that the clubs lose these replays. And also, when Hereford beat Newcastle, that was in a replay. You know, it's some of the greatest moments in the history of the competition have come from replays, and I think it's very sad that you get rid of them. But I think Philippe is right. There is one too many cup competition. Like, if you look at the Bundesliga, they have a month off, a whole month, and they have one fewer cup competition.
Yeah.
So no wonder their players are fresher for major tournaments.
So they split revenues already, don't they? Like, if you know, where you go, you get half the gate receipts.
Yeah, but if you pooled it...
For the whole tournament?
For the whole tournament, oh, okay. Then you could split it amongst the smaller clubs. Because obviously gate receipts for Man United are irrelevant in the FA Cup, but they're not irrelevant to Doncaster Rovers.
That's a good point. I like, Philippe, it shows that you're a better man than I am, because your thought was about how this impacts on fans and clubs. And when I saw it that the break is staggered so that there are five Premier League games taking place on one weekend and five on another, it means that people who work in football don't get a winter break. And that was the thing that grated me the most out of this. Would it make any difference? The idea is what? So our players aren't tired, so we win the World Cup.
No, that's rubbish. Okay. Well, I said that's rubbish, but perhaps it has some influence somewhere. The idea is more a question of giving some rest time physically, I think, for the players, as much for prevention of injuries is, for me, would be a priority. There are other countries in which there is a smaller winter break. Spain, for example, nobody ever mentions that, but Spain has got a sort of winter break around Christmas.
They get 18 days.
In total?
I think so.
I mean, it seems, and they've got a very heavy Copa del Rey schedule as well, and they've got 20 teams in their league, not like Bundesliga, which has only got 18. So it's possible to accommodate it perhaps in a little bit more, friendlier fashion. The other thing as well is that, maybe it's just me, maybe I just missed it, consultation? Am I missing something here? Are fans being consulted about that?
About what?
I mean, change in, we're going to change the way we play football in this country. We've taken a decision.
I don't think anyone is particularly seems to be interested in what fans think, you know.
Well, that's another proof of it. Yeah. But, I mean, this was not exactly transparent.
They should have done it like the Leeds process. Fans consulted their fans over the new badge, shouldn't they?
Except they didn't, really.
I know they didn't.
Yeah, but that's typical. You know, you consult people about things which have absolutely of no importance whatsoever. And you don't consult them about something which has a huge impact on the way that you live your football and you support your football club.
I'm sure, Barry, you brought up this point before, or certainly someone has on the pod, that if you have this winter break, clubs won't just do, you know, a warm weather away day like West Brom. They'll do a money-spinning tour to China.
No.
No, they won't?
No, that's not the way it works. When you look at, for example, what Bundesliga clubs, is that, yes, they use it as a means to freshen themselves. So they usually go, yes, for warm weather training, but it's proper training. It's just like you don't have the pressure of training at the intensity that you should be training for a game. You can work on tactics, which managers in the Premier League, if you're talking about the Premier League, have hardly any time to work on given the intensity of the programme, which is one thing that you hear every single foreign manager talk about. But the only time that you work on that is in pre-season, and that's about it.
I mean, clubs complain about not getting a break, but the thing is, if you get knocked out of the third or fourth round of the cup, you are almost certainly guaranteed 2 weeks off, at least one two-week break, and possibly two-week breaks.
Which is, again, it's all about the big guys. The guys who will be involved in Europe, the guys who will be involved
but in... But they tend to have the bigger squads same. And can therefore don't need a break as much. I mean, it's a tenuous argument, but it's the best one I've got.
Ellis, do you think that... when players go for warm weather training, they sort of come back with the holiday blues. They might not perform on the next game because they've been, you know, they're sad to be back at work.
I hate to bring up my WhatsApp group with Danny Gabardon again.
Okay, no.
But he told me that he described it as a drinkathon, a warm weather break. He said that he was away in Dubai with QPR and Mark Hughes didn't give them a night out and there was a dressing room revolt. So... I would be very frustrated as a supporter if my club decided to use a winter break as an excuse to play lucrative friendlies. It has to be used for players to recover from injury and to prevent injury and for them to work on tactics and to freshen players prior to international tournaments. That's the purpose of a winter. That's what everyone wants from it.
Arsenal play Manchester City tonight. At the moment, it seems to be on. Dave Mitchell writes, as a Gooner, should I be happy if we beat City tonight? Or should it frustrate me even more that we put in a complete no-show at the weekend? I generally don't know what I want. The realist wants 3 points, but I'll be annoyed if we suddenly look decent after that bleep show.
That's a very Arsenal-y remark, this.
It is. Yeah. Daniel says, would it be more Arsenal to lose to City in exactly the same manner on Sunday or to produce an amazing performance and win when it doesn't matter?
The amazing performance looks some way off the radar at the moment, doesn't it?
They're very good at home, though, Arsenal.
Mm.
They are very good at home. And
But not against the big guys, because if you look at it, they won against Spurs, they drew against Liverpool, they drew against Chelsea, and they lost against Manchester United. So that's not exactly the record of a title contender. They're much better at home, it's true. Yeah. If you look at the away form, Arsenal would be mid-table, basically, with Bournemouth or something like that. Mm. And if you look at the home table, they would be comfortably in the top four. This said the nature of the defeat on Sunday was such that it's almost impossible to think of a renaissance. Unless City have got a really, really bad, bad day at the office, which is, of course, possible. And Mkhitaryan is going to play. So a little bit of a difference, I suppose.
Sunday, as an impartial Arsenal watcher, Arsenal observer, Sunday felt significant in terms of Arsene Wenger's time at the club. But then so did them losing 8-2 to Man United, and that was in 2011.
Just some quotes from his press conference. I've turned the whole world down to respect my contracts. My position is the last worry I have at the moment. My worry is to get the team focused and ready for tomorrow's game. Is there anybody who thinks Arsene Wenger should be there? I mean, the frustration I have is that I was an apologist for a long time. Mm. I was a supporter when people I thought were, you know, not the footballing intellectuals were saying he's got to go years ago, and it turns out that they were right.
Well, I think his employers think he should be there, and theirs is the only opinion that matters. He's making them money. That's what they want. That's what they're in it for. It's sad, but it's true.
But he must know.
It's the first time that the ball is clearly in the camp of the directors of the club. The first time ever. In the past, it's always been very much, he's the guy who's got us through the Emirates phase. Perhaps nobody else could have done it in the way he did it, qualifying regularly, Champions League, all this sort of thing. We're not going to go over that all over again. But there was always a feeling that the decision ultimately was down to him. The decision is my feeling, and it's been for a while this season. The decision is not going to be his this time.
They drew up a shortlist, or apparently they've drawn up a shortlist.
Those kind of shortlists, I mean, I'm a little bit suspicious about, you know, like, one of the guys, you know, even Gazidis or another, went to a journalist and said, oh, by the way, this is the guys we're looking at. Doesn't quite work like that, does it?
Who would be on your shortlist?
Number one would be Carlo Ancelotti for me, as in the club needs to steady very, very quickly. I thought Jardim was quite an interesting idea, actually. He's a man who is very versatile. He might not be the most charismatic manager on the planet, but he's done a remarkable job with Monaco, and he's done it in two fashions. He's done it as a defensive coach and as an incredibly attacking coach, so which means he's got this versatility. Otherwise, people have been talking about Thomas Tuchel, but I'm wondering if it's not like the hip factor here is, I don't know if these people know much about Thomas Tuchel. There is a sense, you know, with the number of people who have been recruited by Arsenal, that they're looking at a different model. And it's true that the model they're looking at is very much a German model. And you also think of the recruitment as being part of that.
The list
is possible.
The list that producer Jonathan's just put in front of me, Jardim, Monaco, obviously, Arteta.
Arteta would make a lot of sense.
But inexperienced. I mean, surely not experienced enough.
No, but if you're looking for somebody, well, people speak very, very highly of him at City. And he generally...
Barry, what are you eating? It's like sitting next to someone in the cinema.
pink bonbons that producer Jonathan provided as a morale-boosting snack in yesterday's car.
Are you in crisis, Barry?
No, I'm just hungry. I need a sugar rush.
Do you have any breakfast? Remember that.
Philippe, back to why Arteta might be a good
idea. I was saying, you know, if you're looking for somebody who represents some kind of continuity, somebody who is an Arsenal player, somebody who was really respected at the club, somebody that the fans would have no problem with and would be actually very well intentioned towards, somebody who is spoken of very, very highly indeed at Manchester City, including by Pep Guardiola, who said, I think, repeatedly that he had it. He had it in himself to be a coach in a very highly rated club. So why the heck not? The one thing that I hope for is that it's actually going to be planned and we're not going to have a kind of Everton situation or Swansea situation a while ago. That's the one thing that I'm a bit worried about, because I'm looking around at the club and I'm saying, who's going to take the decision?
And in terms of continuation policy, surely they've had 10 years to prepare for this.
Just give it to Steve Bold.
Yeah, give it to George Graham. I'd love that.
Paolo Fonseca.
Yeah. Sort them out.
Paolo Fonseca, who's the Shakhtar manager, Germany head coach Joachim Löw, Ancelotti and
Joachim Löw I'd heard about a couple of months ago for somebody who was a bit more reputable. And yeah, it's obviously somebody they must have been looking at. And he, you know, after the World Cup as well, perfect moment for him to go back to club management. I said to go to club management because he's never been a top level club manager.
Manchester City play Chelsea on Sunday, so after this game. You wonder if they'll rest players for the Arsenal game. On the subject of Pep, he's writing to the FA to defend his Catalunya ribbon. Danzig below the line says, "Our discussion on Monday of Guardiola's ribbon was obnoxious. To have the publicity to take one stand close to his heart and not take others, perhaps more distant or more complicated, it's natural to everyone with an opinion. Rafa Benitez doesn't spend his time excoriating the labour practices of Sports Direct, and he doesn't mention the Catalan political prisoners. Is he somehow more honourable in his consistency?"
Well, yes. Nick McGeehan from Human Rights Watch, who has done a lot of work on the field of human rights abuses in the Middle East, tweeted to say that our conversation was top drawer and long overdue. So I'm going to go with his take.
And Philippe, you were sort of backing we said on Monday, which is, you know, Pep is
I've been backing then. I've been talking. I was at the press conference and I didn't. I was very close to. I really bit my lip because I said if I ask the question I want to ask, I'm not going to be able to hold it. Fortunately, Rob Harris of AP. Asked the right question very politely, very courteously. It was kicked in the long grass. It was basically, you know, they decide to do what they want in their own country, which I thought was. And it's, I'll stop here because I admire Pep Guardiola as a coach, like we all do. His stance on this is, and again, I will stop. I have a big problem with it.
So.
And I don't think I'm the only person. I think even at Manchester City, they do have a problem now. Because it's brought into perspective when the one thing Manchester City don't want to be brought into perspective, which is their links with the regime, where people are detained against their will, where people are routinely abused. It's highlighted it. So in a way, I'm happy he's done it because we're talking about it for a change.
So it'd be,
at long last.
If he didn't wear the ribbon, you wouldn't be angry? I mean, that's a trite point.
If he didn't wear the ribbon and had... Because as a private citizen, he's got absolutely every right to support whoever and fight for whichever. When he did his speeches during the referendum or the non-referendum, whichever way you call it, it's his absolute right as a citizen. You know, you don't want to take that away from him. What I have a problem with is that, and it's a bit of a tricky one, if you're using your position as the figurehead of a club which is based, whose financial resources entirely derive from a nation state, which has got an appalling human rights record, and you start doing a big speech about humanity, arbitrary detention and so forth, and you do it for one thing and completely decide to ignore what is happening in the country that is paying your salary, I think you've got a big problem. If you decide to keep Sturm and say, I'm doing my job, we all have to do these kind of things. We've all worked for companies that were tainted. We journalists, I mean, some of our colleagues work for newspapers whom I despise for their political attitude, but who are genuinely good journalists who do a wonderful job for these papers, and I would never throw the stone at them, ever. It's this picking and choosing, which is, I think, I don't know what the word would be for that, but...
It's inconsistent, isn't it?
It's more than inconsistent. I think it's hypocritical, and it's worse than that.
Do you? We got.
And also, I remember. I mean, to take another example, I remember the fact that when Zahir Belounis, the Franco-Algerian footballer, who was held against his will for 2 years in Qatar, sent an open letter to Pep Guardiola when he was manager at Bayern Munich and addressed Pep Guardiola as an ambassador for Qatar 2022. He wasn't asking Pep to say, this guy should be free and so forth. That's not what Zahir wanted. He said, could you please highlight my plight and could you perhaps use your influence as an ambassador for Qatar 2022 just to raise my case and just to make people know about it. It was an incredibly humble letter. And Guardiola, again, kicked it in the long grass when he was asked the question at a press conference at Bayern Munich. So he's got previous.
Out of interest, if Manchester City were still run by Peter Swales or Franny Lee, would you have an issue with Guardiola showing the yellow, wearing the yellow ribbon?
No.
So it's the inconsistency of him not speaking out about what's happening in Qatar.
Ken Early kind of nailed it. He described Manchester City as a host organism, which I just thought was perfect. Because you said there, you know, this is the club they support. I don't think it is the club most of them supported all their lives. It's a completely different club. It's the same name, but...
You know, but that happens to lots of different football teams. And then I guess...
Well, that's whataboutery. We're talking about Manchester City.
But then I get you get to the sort of deep philosophical point about how we're all hypocrites because we don't check if our T-shirt was organically sourced or where it was made.
That's different. If it becomes like... Because that becomes self-justification. It's not the same thing as self-exploration. You know, the thing of, you know... We as I said, we're all tainted, if you can call that, because, you know, nothing in binary, nothing is black and white. In Manchester City, there are loads of things you could admire in the club, as well as a club, as the way it is run at the moment. It's a very, very well-run club with people who are highly professional, who run an absolutely magnificent operation. And you could admire that. And on the other hand, you've got to think, oh, but this is also that. And how do you live with it?
I'm a total hypocrite when it comes to footballers or people involved in football and their political affiliations. I loved it when Robbie Fowler scored and lifted his shirt to show a T-shirt that supported the Liverpool Dockers. I was far less cool with Paolo Di Canio's fascist salutes when he was playing for Lazio. Mm. But you can't allow... You can't allow people... You either allow everyone to do it or you can't support it and then complain when someone who you don't share their political affiliations with expresses themselves politically on a football pitch. But with Guardiola, the inconsistency of not talking about Qatar, especially when his point with the yellow ribbon was that you cannot reach an agreement through dialogue if you are chucking people in prison, which is what has happened in Spain, and yet he's completely quiet on this issue in Qatar and
in the Emirates more importantly now. So
well, yeah, thank you chaps. That's quite a long step from when Jonathan Wilson asked if cats had foreskins.
Really,
isn't it?
It really has been a pod of two halves.
It has, hasn't it? Right, we'll be back in a second with part three. Welcome back to part three of Guardian Football Weekly Extra, England's women. Phil Neville takes charge of his first match as their manager tonight. They are participating in the She Believes Cup in the USA. Friendlies against some of the best teams in the world tonight. They take on France, who are ranked sixth in New Jersey. They play the hosts on Sunday, who are first in the world, and then Germany on Thursday in Orlando. Phil Neville's quotes, "People want me to fail 100%, but do you know what? That's just how it was in my playing career. It's part of my motivation. The team have got their motivation. I've got mine. It's to show people that we will be successful." I was Alex Scott, I was chatting to at the Carabao Cup final. She was saying that actually the players are just very excited to get going and have been impressed with him so far.
Well, I think that comment is self-pitying nonsense. I don't think anyone wants them to fail.
No.
I think people were rightfully a bit puzzled as to how he got the job, but now that he has it, I certainly wish him nothing but well, and I'd say I'm probably in the majority. Why would anyone want
It's sort of understandable
fail?
Why he might
the,
be a bit
criticism
defensive.
Criticism was more about the process, selection process, and than about him, to be honest.
Personal against him. So if that's what he genuinely believes, I think he's wrong, and I hope someone sets him straight.
Ellis, are you messaging Danny Gavidon?
No, but we're in the same group as England for the 2019 World Cup. So personally, I hope he fails miserably. We're currently top, but England have a game in hand. Wales are playing England at St Mary's in April. I'll be taking my three-year-old daughter, even though she actively hated soccer tots, cries whenever football is on the telly, but these are the things you do when you love your kids. She's got zero interest in football. So, yeah, from a purely selfish perspective, I hope that he does very badly, but that's nothing to do with Phil Neville.
Is it your three-year-old daughter who I heard on some, one of your many podcasts that walks into the room and goes, here she is.
Yeah, here she comes.
She's a pearly king.
Yes, she is. She goes to a toddler group in South London, so it's affected the way she speaks. She walks into the room and says, here she comes. And I
she
said,
have a fag yeah, out of her mouth.
I said, what were you today expecting her to say, a good little girl? And she went, I was a cheeky little urban.
Football corner, Barry. Rangers.
Just one thing about Phil Neville.
Of course.
One of the things, perhaps, also the fact that his first game is against France is, in a way, quite interesting, because France has got, as a manager, Corinne Diacre.
She managed in the French league.
She was the first woman to manage a professional club in France. And for three seasons, Clermont Foot, which at the beginning people said, oh, it's just a publicity stunt. No. She did extremely well. And in fact, she's now gone to become manager of the French national women's team. So there's a bit of a contrast between the two, you know, the two journeys.
Mm. And a contrast between how much experience she has and Phil Neville has.
She certainly got an experience of the women's game. She has 121 caps for France.
Well, over the five Olympics since 2000 and four World Cups and four Women's European Championships, all but one has been won by a team with a female manager. So the argument against Phil Neville being manager is quite a strong one, but I suppose for the good of the women's game.
You really
game
hope
in
he
England,
fails, don't you?
For the good of the women's game in England, I hope he succeeds. I just hope the Wales qualify ahead of England.
Football corner, Barry. Rangers beat St Johnstone 4-1. It may be more an infomercial for you than me asking you any questions.
I'm really not across any midweek.
What were you doing yesterday?
Pardon?
What were you doing yesterday?
I was otherwise engaged.
Rangers beat St Johnstone 4-1. They're 6 points behind Celtic, having played a game more. Hearts and Kilmarnock drew 1-1. All of last night's games were frozen off. Scott Brown has retired from international football again. So we wish him well. In the Football League, there were a handful of games in midweek. In the Championship, a big game at the bottom. Hull drew 1-1 with Barnsley. Good news for you there, Barry. Sunderland with a tiny bit of hope. As you said, relegation is only relegation, isn't it, from the Premier League?
Yeah, but it's the hope that kills you, isn't it?
A bit like our journey yesterday.
unlike, I suspect, Sunderland, where we got there in the end.
Sheffield United beat Reading 3-1 to move up to sixth. League One leaders Blackburn extended their lead at the top to 4 points thanks to a 3-0 win at AFC Wimbledon. Peterborough won their first game since Grant McCann was sacked on Sunday. They beat Walsall 2-1, moved within 3 points of the playoffs. Their new manager is Steve Evans. Why are you making that face, Barry?
Oh, Steve Evans.
I interviewed him once, he was really nice.
Did you? I interviewed him once and he was obnoxious.
In League Two, second place, Wickham lost.
Sorry,
at home to...
wasn't the Peterborough game midweek, one of the small bits of action I did see was one of the players out helping shovel snow off the pitch during the game.
Well, that's not... While the ball was in play?
No, the game, I think, was temporarily postponed so they could clear the snow from the lines around the penalty area, or the penalty area lines. And one of the players, I can't remember who it was.
Stephen Taylor,
yeah. That's correct. Yeah, ran over and got a rake or something and started vigorously trying to clear the lines. But he seemed to be doing very badly, as if he'd never shoveled snow before. So
it's a very temperate climate in Peterborough. First time he'd seen snow.
And in League Two, second place, Wickham lost at home to Coventry, who boosted their playoff hopes by moving to eighth. A bit of Europe, Philippe. The French Cup.
Oui.
Tell us about it.
Two things. One is an extraordinary performance by Chambly, which is a club that, believe me, you'd love to love. A club that was started by local people, local family, and so on. And they qualified yesterday for the semi-finals, obviously for the first time in their history, by beating Strasbourg. But it's really a bittersweet story, because on the night that they qualified, the man who actually created the club died, Walter Louis Luzzi, whose sons are actually taking care of the club now. So very, very sad story. On a more positive note, looking forward beyond the French Cup to the Champions League and the eagerly awaited PSG Real Madrid.
Breaking news, AFP is reporting the team doctor saying that Neymar is out for 3 months, needs surgery.
Which is very bad news for PSG, but I'm also thinking 3 months. It's also not very good news for Brazil, right? Because if what is operated on is the metatarsal.
Mm-hmm. Takes time to get that right.
Yeah, I've had it. Many people have had it, and it takes almost a year to be back. I suppose no longer. But this would explain why Unai Emery used the Marseille game, which they won 3-0 in the quarterfinal of the French Cup, as a kind of experiment. Because suddenly we saw Angel Di Maria playing in his preferred role, which is on the left hand side, which would normally be Neymar's position. And Angel Di Maria was superb. Scored twice with his right foot, which is quite extraordinary, but also was the man of the match and has now scored 10 in 10. So it's not a blessing in disguise, a big, big blow to lose Neymar for such a length of time. But they do have got a plan B, and the plan B looks to be pretty, pretty decent. But I mean, 3 months, I mean, I'm a bit in shock because PSG would be very keen to stress that all the rumours about a long time absence were basically inventions. We should also say, because there's another breaking, that Kylian Mbappe is very uncertain for that return leg as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, well, Real Madrid, actually, they got done in the week in Spain. They were shocked at Espanyol. Gerard Moreno scored a 93rd-minute winner to end their five-game winning run. What's going on there, Philippe?
I don't know.
Okay. in Italy, holders Juventus beat Atalanta 1-0, 2-0 aggregate to reach the Coppa Italia final. Pjanic's penalty was enough for a win. They're on course for their fourth consecutive Coppa Italia. Standing in their way will be AC Milan. Their second leg against Lazio finished 0-0. Their first leg had finished 0-0. They won 5-4 on penalties. In Serie A, Napoli beat Cagliari 5-0 on Monday for their 10th successive league win. I've stolen your piazza here, Barry, but you were busy yesterday. Hamsic's goal, particularly impressive for its one-touch build-up play, so I'm told.
Do you want to hear a football boot anecdote?
Of course.
In qualifying for the 58 World Cup, a Welsh centre-half, I think it might have been Ray Daniel, we were playing the Czech Republic, forgot his boots. So they had to source boots in the Czech Republic. In those days, boots were so horrendously hard, you had to wear them in over the course of many months. So they kept them in a soapy bath overnight. But they were still so uncomfortable, he played the last quarter of an hour of the game in his bare feet. Can you imagine that with those heavy 1950s footballs? That was more comfortable than playing with those boots.
Apparently in Euro 96, Gazza forgot his boots for the England-Scotland game, and he was too scared to tell Terry Venables. So he borrowed Teddy Sheringham's, which were two sizes too big, and scored that volley, basically wearing clogs.
Wow.
I mean, it may be apocryphal and nonsense, but if it is, it just shows what a player he was.
There might be a few footballers as well. There's, I mean, this is like turning into a pod within a pod. But quite a few footballers wear shoes which are too small for them, which actually makes it even more dangerous for them, but because they feel that it gives them more control.
Yeah.
And that certainly doesn't help when it comes to protection, does it?
You need a happy medium between the 1950s boot that Tom Finney would have worn and the modern boot that is more like a slipper. I would wager it's your Adidas Predator, Puma King from the mid-90s, that I think is the zenith of football boot technology. I don't remember any metatarsals in the 90s.
I'm a Puma King man.
Yeah, me too.
100%. Antoine Griezmann scored all four in Atletico Madrid's win over Leganes. They're 4 points behind Barcelona, who play Las Palmas tonight, and the two face each other on Sunday at the Nou Camp. In the Bundesliga, Dortmund missed the chance to restore a 3-point cushion in second place after being held to a 1-1 draw at home to Augsburg. They're 19 points behind Bayern Munich. Big games in the Premier League. Swansea, West Ham, Ellis. Now, you lost 4-1, but Paul Merson, who was doing this game on Soccer Saturday, I think, said it wasn't really a 4-1. Carlos Carvajal just gambled and you had lots of strikers on the pitch, and actually that's quite a positive.
Yeah, he brought Tammy on for a midfielder, and, you know, we were on a 10-game unbeaten run, so we were bound to come unstuck at some point. I think it's quite a good time to play West Ham. We're at home. Karen Brady wrote a nine-page letter to West Ham supporters, which has been met with disdain, because obviously West Ham supporters are very unhappy with London Stadium.
They're planning a protest ahead of the game against Burnley on the 10th of March, she said. More money will be made available for investment in the playing squad. Supporters will also be able to enjoy a fan zone. Fans love a fan zone. And see the renaming of the walkway in which next month's protest is set to take place, and memorabilia from the 1966 World Cup will be showcased in a trophy room or a museum.
Yeah.
So what else do they want?
Well, they don't think there's enough. I mean, West Ham fans have plenty of problems with the way the club is run, but one of their issues and grievances is that it's not an obviously West Ham United stadium, and that there's not very much West Ham related stuff at the ground, which she has promised to change. But apparently she has promised these things in the past. I think 36 points will be enough, and if we beat West Ham on Saturday, we'll get up to 30. So, fingers crossed.
Southampton Stoke is also huge at the bottom. The early kickoff is the race for seventh place, Barry, Burnley versus Everton. Are you excited?
No, I'm not.
Ellis, do you want to say anything critical about Everton? Because
you hate them.
I've got zero problem with Everton. I don't know where this has come from.
It's a pity, because Lars was here, he hates Burnley even more than Ellis hates Everton.
In fact, I'm very close friends with an Evertonian. We have dinner every couple of months. We just talk about the beautiful game. I'm very fond of the club, very fond of the city. I don't know where this. I've got this reputation as someone who dislikes Everton. Basically, I made one factual error the last time I was on and got pilloried for it. But, you know,
keep it coming.
If you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen.
Leicester play Bournemouth, Spurs, Huddersfield, Watford, West Brom. Liverpool, Newcastle's the 5:30 kickoff. Brighton play Arsenal on Sunday, and Palace, Manchester United on Monday.
Some of my closest friends.
You're going to be haunted by this one.
Hey, feedback corner, everybody. Aaron says, how many men do Gillette watch in their R&D centre every day? And what are your thoughts on the statistic? 80, and yes, it's amazing. Every single time I see it. Cam says, Barry, have you got any proof that Bonnie Tyler is Martin Tyler's sister? I think you're talking shite.
Well, I said they were siblings, and then I thought you said straight away that I was obviously lying, but a lot of people seem to believe me.
Total eclipse of the heart, Bonnie Tyler, our queen of hearts.
Yes.
Is
Martin Tyler's sister.
Bonnie Tyler used to come on stage, and Martin Tyler would say, and now Bonnie Tyler, and it's live! Matt says, to finish off, as it's St David's Day, who is the greatest Welsh footballer ever? I'll come to you last, Ellis.
Instead of saying who I think it was, can I say who I think Ellis will say it was?
Go on then.
John Charles.
That's who I've got to say.
Philippe?
Yeah, I was going to say John Charles.
Billy Meredith, Google him.
Oh, Billy Meredith, okay. The Welsh wizard.
Absolutely. Used to play with a matchstick in his mouth. Used to dribble down the wing with a matchstick stuck between his teeth. A toothpick, not a matchstick. Yeah, it was a toothpick. He once got tackled very heavily and swallowed the toothpick, and he had continued to do that in every game. Played for 25 years.
Is there a better word to be said in a Welsh accent than toothpick?
Toothpick.
Well, I've been, you know, swatting up on Ellis, so I'm listening to his other podcast. Mm-hmm. And,
are you going to invite Barry onto that?
To try and reciprocate his love for me. You know, because my admiration for him is huge well. But there was one, I think it was your ex...
The Radio X one.
Radio X one with John Robbins. And there was some story you were telling that meant you kept saying the word toothbrush, but it was toothbrush.
Yeah.
Toothbrush.
Toothbrush.
You've never sounded more Welsh.
Toothbrush.
Toothbrush.
I'm going to get my toothbrush.
Producer Jonathan says Argentina's good in Welsh.
Argentina. I've completely lost faith in how I speak now.
Ian Beale is good.
Yeah, absolutely terrible. you're terrible, Barry. Oh, you're absolutely terrible.
I've got to get that in my ringtone.
I would say the top three are Billy Meredith, John Charles... Ivor Allchurch, he's in there as well.
Where would you have Giggsy and Gareth Bale?
Well, in terms of club achievements, Ryan,
and Ian Rush
is the highest. Oh, don't get me started on Ian Rush. I used to draw pictures of Ian Rush and send them to Anfield. Ian Rush and Dean Saunders. Oh, they were my big two.
I played up front with Ian Rush, you know.
What?
Yeah.
The air almost turned blue there.
Yeah, my goodness.
Tell me about yourself.
I upset Dean Saunders.
Oh.
On the radio, I accused him of talking cobblers, which was just a figure of speech.
I was on air with him and you were on the phone.
He took it really personally.
Anyway, listen, thanks very much, Philippe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alice.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
I just think we should probably spend some time apart.
I'll see you on Sunday, if the good Lord spares me.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.